And now let me invite questions from the media.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And our first question comes from the line of Canon Tasky. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes. Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for having this teleconference. I was wondering if by any chance there was any information in the report talking about San Bernardino County. I cover San Bernardino County and portions of Los Angeles County. So I didn't know if there was anything in there or any insight as to what's happening on this end or anything like that.
This is John Rogers. We do have principals from San Bernardino County that participated in the survey as well as participated in the interview, and there's a couple principals from San Bernardino County that are quoted in the report. Now, all of the principals were promised that their names would remain anonymous so that they could report openly about the conditions and what's happened in their schools, and so we keep their names confidential, and yet you will see evidence of San Bernardino County. In addition, you can go on our website, which I showed on the last slide, and find reports on Assembly or California Senate districts, which will show what's happened in San Bernardino County writ large.
Okay, great. Well, maybe I can give the offices a call. You can maybe help me navigate through that.
Absolutely.
Area. Absolutely. That. Great. Thank you so much.
And our next question comes from the line of Howard Bloom. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering what are the specific cuts that Washington Prep is facing?
Yeah. Todd Hewlett here. Specifically, over the last 2 years, for instance, our building and grounds custodial work, we've been cut from 19 individuals for 26 acres of campus to 8. In clerical staff, which run our offices, we've been cut over the last 2 years, not including the coming year's cuts, from 17 clerical staff to 6 in the offices. So that really amounts to less time that to clean our campus and, of course, less time for students to get answers to questions that they need regarding how to graduate and how to move forward through our educational system. Finally, we've been our instructional material counts have been cut from $52,000 when I started there 2 years ago to $16,000 for over 2,500 kids. So, you know, we've had to really figure out ways to do much more with less in terms of our instructional material accounts.
And what's your acreage there? I'm sorry, I missed that one detail.
Our acreage is we have 26 acres of campus.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. And so you can imagine the impact that has had on morale, on what the kids see and experience in my community every day. The impact on our offices, I have to close my attendance office twice a day now because I have no one to man it due to staffing issues. So parents that come during those hours to the attendance office have to wait until we have someone there to help them with their needs. And I might add, you know, Washington, the community there is 90% free and reduced lunch, and I have probably 100 kids that are from our local camps. We have probably 200 to 300 kids that are foster kids. So there's great needs for them at the school site. They do come to school each day, many of them just to eat. And have a meal, and that's something that's very important to them. So luckily, we haven't suffered any cutbacks in our cafeteria services in terms of food, but we did get reduced staff in the cafeteria services as well. So some of the cuts that have hit us very hard at Washington, and sure enough, probably many other schools around our district.
What about your faculty?
We've been cut this coming year for 2011-12. We just got our cuts last week. I'm losing 21 teachers. 21 teachers, of which...
How many?
21, 2-1.
Of how many total?
Out of 130 teachers. So you can imagine the impact impact on our school reform efforts for next year. It's quite devastating, and, you know, as my colleague in Sacramento indicated, you see it on the kids' faces. They feel it, and they see what's, they hear their teachers, and they, in fact, last Friday, many of them walked and demonstrated on behalf of their teachers and staff that are being reduced in force.
One last follow-up. Were you spared the faculty cuts until this year because of either KIA money or the federal money?
Correct. Yeah. The Obama stimulus money was, we hired six teachers on using those funds, but those are gone now. And the KIA funds were able to keep us fairly whole with teachers, but we've lost teachers even with KIA over the last several years.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And our next question comes from the line of John Ciani. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Do you have any achievement gap data on that?
We don't have achievement gap data per se, although we do report, you'll find in the full report, we show the pathway to college of the class of 2009. The reason why we show the class of 2009 rather than last year is it's the last data that we have of publicly available data that allows us to track students from ninth grade through graduation and then into college. And you'll see in the pathways that only about two-thirds of California's ninth graders made it to graduation, but that fewer African American and Latino students made it from ninth grade to graduation. Just over half of Latino and African American students made it to graduation. And then those numbers drop further when we look at the number of Latino and African American students who then went on to enroll in California State Universities or University of California campuses. And those differences are significant because when we look to recent public opinion surveys, we see that roughly 90% of California parents want their students to attain at least a bachelor's degree. Many want a graduate degree for their students. And that holds true for Latino, African American, white, and Asian parents. And so these outcomes do not comport with the aspirations of California's public.
And also, is there any breakdown by county for Kern County?
As I was suggesting before, we do have information that's available on the website where you can look at individual high schools, and you can also look at assembly districts and senate districts that are representing Kern County. You'll find conditions and outcomes for those areas, as well as the economic conditions in the neighborhoods surrounding the high schools in Kern County.
What is the website?
You can access the website at www.edopp.org or www.edop.org.
ED dot what now? The first one?
www.edopp.org.
O-R-G, okay.
Thank
and
you.
The other one was again?
That's the same website.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Catherine Barron. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if you could give us a little more information about the Williams and CTA suits regarding instructional materials. I'm curious what's happened to that. I mean, didn't they, particularly for the first and second decile schools, require a certain amount of money go into that?
So I think what has happened in the last handful of years is that between 2005 and 2008, you saw some improvement in educational conditions in all of California schools, but particularly those schools that have been poorly served before. So during that period of time, you saw more qualified teachers, teachers with the basic qualifications, moving into a number of schools. You saw more counselors and more teachers moving into schools that previously had been underserved. In the last 2 years, you've seen much of that progress go away. As overall in California, we've seen deteriorating conditions. And then those schools that have more low-income students have faced additional pressures for a number of different reasons. And as a consequence, everybody's been hurt, but I think in particular students in schools with large numbers of low-income kids have been hurt the most.
And this is Tom Prolix, and I just want to add on to Professor Rogers' comment and your good question related to the instruction materials. I am also conducting a survey asking each of the superintendents in California to let us know what programs are being cut, what they're doing with FLEX. As you know, FLEX was a condition that was asked for by school boards and superintendents to try to balance their budget and try to keep classroom cuts from occurring if possible. But that's meant that a lot of their instructional materials dollars have been flexed into basically saving teacher positions, saving what remains of some of the art, music, drama, and science programs. So that's a big issue in terms of, has the civil rights, underlying civil rights issue in the Williams case been exacerbated? I think it has. And I think, again, this report, in a larger context, the disparities, the unequal education taking place in California, raises the issue of a larger Williams-type civil rights issue, that our students are not getting an equal education in California. And this report documents it in many respects, and we're gathering more information to find out the disparities, especially, you know, those districts that have a lot of Title I schools, CUIA schools, what is happening to not only the instructional materials, but generally class size, summer school disappearing, length of the school year being shortened, and so forth.
Well, Superintendent, when is that supposed to be ready?
We put out the call since we were waiting for most districts to go through the preliminary look at how they would deal with the March 15th deadline and what they would, you know, map out as a course of action. So we've begun this survey over the last week, and it'll take another 2 to 3 weeks to gather the information from the county superintendents of education and the respective superintendents of each district in California.
Well, one other follow-up question to all this. I noticed in the report that it discusses not just instructional materials, but sort of the, you know, degrading of the computers in schools and other materials like that. And so I'm wondering two things. One, is anything happening to put out the call to many of these, you know, high-tech companies that are kind of the ones leading the charge to reform schools and or started to because they weren't getting enough qualified workers? And two, what's the status of online instructional materials that are in many cases more up-to-date and more nimble in terms of what teachers need?
Well, this is Tom Torlakson. I'll let Todd and Paula and Professor Rogers answered more at length, but I am putting a very high priority on changing the legislation, the current statutes to allow more online learning and schools to be reimbursed for online learning courses, to have that legitimized, and to basically provide the connections to the Internet and challenge all the broadband providers, all the miracle companies that have enabled us to learn so much more via the Internet. And so, New Tech High in Sacramento and New Tech High in Napa, you know, pioneered the way, and I do believe that technology is part of the answer. But again, because of FLEX, a lot of school districts that could otherwise have used textbook money for some of these digital curricular materials are not able to, and they're not able to buy the computers to provide the access. So I'm working
Correct.
With business groups around the state to provide more help from the tech industry itself. We have a working group and an initiative called No Child Left Offline, which we believe will be part of the answer helping with this crunch. But we also need money to fund access to the devices to get to the Internet.
But doesn't Williams state that those districts must get the money for updated instructional materials?
Yes. That's the way I read it. And, you know, districts are struggling, and I don't know if Paula or Todd want to answer further, or Professor Rogers.
Yeah, this is Todd. With regard to online classes in our district, our community, it's a bright horizon for us, but they do cost money. The access to the curriculum does cost money. And also in our community, we're finding that the breadth or the number of students able to actually take online courses is actually quite small considering the lack of access in their home community in our neighborhood. So it, you know, while some students are served, I don't see it as a very widely accessed mechanism just yet. But we do have hope for the future in terms of using those types of electronic materials to bring curriculum to kids for both enrichment and remediation.
I didn't mean actually just online courses. I meant that there are a growing number of businesses now that are providing online textbooks, basically, that can be geared toward an individual school or district's curriculum. And they're a lot less expensive and more up-to-date.
And again, this is Tom Torlakson. Our goal is to change the definition of textbook, which is in the state statute, so we can include digital material. I've talked to the big publishers from Pearson, McGraw-Hill, Houghton Mifflin, and said, let's stop mowing down trees and let's go digital. But again, you need the Internet-connecting devices. You need a netbook. You need a laptop.
Right.
And this free material that's out there is very excellent also and very enriching. But again, we're 47th in the nation in using technology to inform instruction and help in instruction, which is an embarrassment, being the land that invented it. But we're at the bottom of the nation in using the whiteboards and interactive computer-connected devices.
So does the state law, I just want to clarify, currently with regard to textbooks, state that they have to be, you know, three-dimensional objects? Is that?
Pretty much. Assemblymember Bob Blumenfield and I have been working on legislation. He has introduced it again to help change the definitions there and online learning. And we're working with Senator Elaine Alquist also on changing the definitions so that digital materials, that as districts make choices, they can equally use it to purchase digital materials or some of the hardware to access the digital materials.
Thank you.
Kathy, if I could just quickly follow up on a broader point you raised. We heard from principals again and again and again that they knew what sort of new technologies would advance instruction and would advance instruction in ways that would engage students who otherwise were not doing well. But they felt like they no longer had the ability either to purchase that new technology or to keep that new technology in the sort of maintenance that would allow it to be used. And so I think this is a case where reform and improvement has been cut back as the funding for technology has gone away.
I'd just like to second that. I mean, Sacramento New Technology High School has new technology in its name, and one of my biggest issues is keeping that going. It's huge infrastructure. It does make learning engaging, and it is important, and it's getting more and more difficult to manage.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, too. Washington, for instance, we have a technology that one of the things we're trying to do with students a lot is frequent checks for understanding in the instructional day. And some of the technologies that are out there we know about, but we're having to share amongst teachers so that we can employ them with kids and utilize them. So, now, again, as Professor Rogers was saying, not all kids have access to it when we do have it.
And there are no further questions on the line at this time.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and thank you so much, Superintendent Torlakson, Todd Eula, and Paula Hansel for being part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. We look forward to answering further questions, and please feel free to contact us here at UCLA IDEA. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect the line.